Over the last 12 months, punk rock has become almost a battle cry in British society. For many people, it's a bigger threat to our way of life than Russian communism or hyperinflation, and it certainly generates more popular excitement than either of those. The punk groups have been set upon with words by clergymen and members of Parliament. This week's papers have carried reports of clashes in Chelsea's King's Road, and the Teds have promised the punks a battle at Margate later this year. Tonight, we shall be seeing punk rock in action and talking to some of its followers, but we'll also be hearing from those outside the movement, from Pastor John Cooper, for instance, who sees punk as degenerate and evil, and from city councillors in London, in Glasgow, in Birmingham, and from Newcastle, whose councils have banned punk rock concerts. On the other hand, some outsiders, like John Peel, the Radio 1 DJ, believe that punk is an exciting musical innovation. But no doubt you have your own opinions, and we'd like to hear what those are, whether you think that punk is a threat to society, whether you think anything should be done about it. You can contact us now, while we're on the air, by phoning in on 061, that's the Manchester code, of course, 061 236 9494. And apart from being on the screen, that number's also included in our programme details in the radio channel.
I'll tell you what, you know, I've not done this for ages, but I think we ought to hear that again. Hold on a second, just talk among yourselves. Listen this, when you listen to it this time, those of you who are familiar with the work of Loudon Wainwright, last time I played it, the pig said, that lead singer sounds like Loudon Wainwright at times. It may sound a bit fanciful, but listen to it again and see what you think. An excuse for playing it twice. An excuse for playing it twice. An excuse for playing it twice. An excuse for playing it twice.
Program's been all about stardom, and the way it's presented to kids is a way out from working class life. We wanted to talk to you because when you first made it, people talked about the rags to riches story of the Undertones, and throughout your career you've shied away from all those trappings of stardom. You haven't let yourselves be set up as having the lifestyle that kids should aim for. Why is that?
I think it's because we haven't got a lifestyle that people should aim for. Not yet, anyway.
We don't shy away from it. Like, when it comes to a simple basic thing as travelling between England and Ireland, we fly. And it may happen to be the most expensive, but it's also the quickest and the easiest way to do it, so we do it. It's just the people haven't pinpointed it. Is that we don't obviously have swimming pools, because it'd be bloody stupid living in Northern Ireland anyway to have a swimming pool.
Couldn't
afford it, and B, it'd be a waste, a complete not a waste
people
of space.
Pee in the water.
But it was like a Rides to Riches story at the very, very beginning. Definitely, it was like a band from nowhere who's only thump, and there they were. But we personally don't shy away from it at all.
Whenever you started off in the band, did it ever occur to you that being the Undertones might be a way out of a dead-end job in Derry, or being on the dole in Derry?
No.
It was a thought at one stage, but it was more an afterthought than sort of collectively getting together in John O'Neill's living room and saying, OK, we're going to get a route out of Derry, we'll make form a band and make loads of money.
It is a way out, you know, it is one, so, to some degree. Yeah. You know, it's sort of getting away from a daily 9-to-5 job.
For how many bands is it an escape route? John, you've said it's an escape route.
Like, it's a cushy life, you know, compared to, say, people I know live in Derry at the moment, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's fairly, you know, we know we're lucky. You know?
But you've been in the business now, what, 4 or 5 years. How many bands do you know are really earning huge sums of money?
Well, we're not, are we?
Not an awful lot.
Why is it that we don't, why the Undertones aren't worthy of being like, you know, the mainstream of British culture, as it were?
That's what we keep asking ourselves, and we're trying to change all that.
Well, you're doing it now. Go on.
The thing, like, we never... The way I seen it, anyway, was London being sort of with the reputation it had during the late 60s of being the fashion centre of the world and setting the pace for everybody else. And the Undertones, like, in general, in the past 2-3 years, haven't exactly been trendsetters. Maybe as regards music, but not physically. Right. And I think people just couldn't really relate to it the way they can to, like, Joe Strummer and Mohican Haircut.
No, that's really... whenever we first started, the thing was anti-fashion, and that was a big thing then.
It was like a deliberate thing.
And it was natural for us. We just felt
able to kind of turn now. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can be more glamorous, like groups like Duran Duran are getting really popular, because they're good looking.
The reason why we've stayed the way we are too must have something to do with the fact that we still go back to Derry and stuff, you know. Yeah. And it sort of keeps our, you know, it's totally different from in London, you know, where you're seeing groups all the time, and you're meeting pop stars all the time and things, you know. And there it's just, you're talking about the football and what bet you're putting on a weekend and stuff, you know.
But I think the real point that should be made is the fact that it's not as really as hip as people make it out to be. If we can sell out this place, and if we've been able to exist through all the trends that have gone on in the past year, then it's not a big a deal really as the NME and the rest of the music papers make out of it. Yeah. That there are basically people there who just want to come and listen to good music.
They just want to listen to the music and be there and just see it.
Yeah.
The reason why a lot of them groups always, because they seem more of a, they're the more successful, I think, and they seem more pop stars, is because they're fairly ruthless, because a lot of times they've been told dress like this because sales records.
Yes, right, the image.
It's more like because it's a natural thing for them to do, because that's what they've been brought up on too. You know.
But why do you think?
Not every case.
Why do you think that pop groups are pushed into an image?
Because money.
People buy it. You know, look at Duran Duran.
Like, we've suffered in the last
year
or so because people.
I, God knows, I have no idea, because I don't buy it. You know, people obviously see something in them which they don't see in themselves, or something in them which they would like to have a hold of, and the way they can have a hold of it is being out and paying out a pound and buying it.
You know
That is a mighty, mighty record, you know. And come the end of the year, that'll be battling with Suspect Device and Shop of Both Sides as my record of the year, I think. Those are the Undertones on Good Vibrations Records.
His kicks on his late night Radio 1 show, and that was before he uttered the words I will never forget. Isn't that the most wonderful record you ever heard in the world? In fact, I'm going to play it again. I cry because I thought the music industry had beat me. I'd just returned from London doing the rounds flogging Teenage Kicks to record labels. None of them wanted to know. I couldn't understand it. Here we had a great record from a great band recorded in the back streets of Belfast for £200 over cans of beer, bags of crisps and a few steel sandwiches. And these people in the big smoke just didn't get it. I cried because I thought I'd let the band down. The Undertones were brilliant. I loved them. This was the chance to put Northern Ireland back on the music map, and that chance had just gone down the tube. But John Peel got it. He got it straight away. He knew what the record was all about. He knew what Good Vibrations was all about. He could hear the energy in that song. Did he know it was going to become one of Ireland's greatest rock and roll songs of all time? The band didn't think it was their best song. He knew it, I knew it. We were right, CBS, CMI, Rough Trade, and all the other record companies were wrong. I'd played Teenage Kicks to them, and some of them told me it was the worst record that they ever heard. From the moment Peely played Kicks, my world and that of the band changed forever. All of a sudden, everybody wanted to know me. I was wined and dined, taking the gigs, and the boys got their contract. That's how we got them, and things were about to start happening. Dave Hyman, with whom I'd set up the building in 102 Great Victoria Street, and had been a close friend from the 60s, wanted to set up Jeff's Books and Anarchist Bookshop with a printing press and everything else. And he got the building, so we decided to do a benefit for him, a big punk gig in Belfast. The whole punk thing had really taken off, but there were still very few gigs for the bands to play, particularly involving local talent in Belfast. The Clash had visited and were a few and didn't get to play, and Elvis Costello had played. But we wanted to do a homegrown concert, bring the Undertones down from Derry, and with the other three records we had out at that point, Rudy's Big Time, Victim, Strange Thing by Night, and this Outcast Self-Conscious Over You, we felt we were strong enough to do it. We needed a venue, so I got all dressed up and went up to Queen's University and told them, my name is Terry Hooley from the Belfast Music Society. I want to book the McMurdo Hall, which is now called the Mandela Hall. And they said, Mr. Hooley, that will be £5. And they gave me a receipt. Is that it? I asked. Yes, it's in the book for Thursday the 15th of June, and it's all yours. That was too easy, I thought. For sure enough, it turned out that they thought I was from Queen's Classical Society when they found out that I had hired the hall out to seven punk bands, Rudy the Outcasts, Undertones, Rootfix, etc. And it was a major punk gig. They freaked out. I always knew that universities were seats of learning. And I can tell you that I learned a few dirty tricks over the next few days as Queen's University tried everything in their power to disrupt the gig. But this was too big an opportunity. I've always believed in Northern Ireland, and here we had a bunch of people, seven bands, who were determined to have their 15 minutes of fame, and it was a chance to stand on a stage and perform in front of a real audience, and a real benefit that it was in their own hometown. Queens tried to stop me getting lights, PA and other equipment into the building, but they hadn't counted on the ace I had up my sleeve, and that was the local Hells Angels, the chosen few. Having grown up in the 60s as a hippie, and in the 70s I was an activist and became great friends with a local Hells Angels chapter in Belfast. I got them to do the door and concert security. Hundreds and hundreds of kids turned up from all over the country, making it one of the best nights of my life. All my hippie friends and bikers and punk friends were all there. It was a mad, mad mixture of people, but it was a fantastic concert. That's the night I got barred from Queen's University for life.
She doesn't know why she's feeling sad. She'll never get what she's never had. She wants to leave home, but she can't get away. Always on her own every single day. Cause she's a, what a total disaster. She's a, she's got nothing to do. She's a, doesn't know what she's after. She's a, she hasn't a clue. She wishes she could live in a world of her own, or go someplace where she's not known. There's not more here to do any good. Can get the satisfaction she wishes she could. Cause she's a, what a total disaster. She's a, she's got nothing to do. She's a, doesn't know what she's after. She's a, she hasn't a clue.
clearly very sweet and beautiful, and just because of the type of people they were and what they were trying to say and so on. When you hear at the opening of Teenage Kicks, when you hear John and Damien and Mickey on the bass and Billy Doherty sort of on the drums, sort of the way those sounds intermesh, the first thing that strikes me about it is how beautiful it is. I mean, how sweet the sound is. And then when you factor in, I mean, Fergal's shimmering voice floating through the instruments, you know, it's a gorgeous noise. And I think that's significant, really. You know, this was a band that sounded beautiful, you know, coming from an ugly place, you know. And while many people would, in conventional terms, see sort of that, sort of the sweetness and the beauty of their music as something soft and mainstream, it was far from mainstream in the Bogside in 1977 and 1978.
Sound like Fergal's ball, no? No, I mean, no, in a word.
So you didn't make any adjustments to be Fergal-esque?
No, I think that would have been... That would have been a really bad move, I think, you know, because people would have twigged that straight away. Yeah. And you just go and do it. I just go and do it, open my mouth and whatever comes out, basically. And some people have drawn comparisons and said he sounds a bit like him, but I've never tried to. Mm. I think the kind of key to this is that the Undertone songs, for some reason, don't lend themselves very well to that kind of mid-Atlantic croon that a lot of singers adopt, and maybe that I would adopt, you know, singing with other bands or whatever. The only way to sing an Undertone song really is in a Derry accent.
I know that because when I'm singing along with Teenage Kicks, I sing it with a Derry accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. on Radio Free Derry. That is what Free Radio is about.
Thank you. disguise all your confessions. Confessions. You are just a nut. I don't know it for a fact. I got a picture from your sister who's writing on the back. All your confessions. Confessions. Talk this out, not too hard to talk about. You can hide your fears and tears, you can even scream and shout. All your confessions. Confessions. Don't look so surprised, you've been telling lies. It's hard to wake up to your makeup, so please take off that disguise. All your confessions. Confessions.
No one ever talked about culture in the 70s. If you were involved in it, you just did it, you know. We never really thought of culture as being something that would attract money to Derry. And I say, unfortunately, there's a little element of that. You know, people have to have a business head on them. So, you know, the emphasis on attracting people here, which is great, you know. But for us, culture would have been something very old-fashioned. You know, it would have been from... because the community we came from would have been speaking Irish, would have been performing at the Fish, which was an Irish music festival, Irish music competition held every Easter, still going of course. So the idea of ever, if you had said to me in 1978, you know, that 35 years later I'd be talking about culture, being a member of the Undertones, I would have just thought it very, very strange. And I still find it very strange that people want to talk about the Undertones, you know, after all these years. Yeah, well, the Undertones still play. We would perform. We have the four backing band, we still play. We've got a different singer. We never asked Fergal whenever we decided to do the Reformation thing.
Yeah.
So we still play. And where are we playing? We're playing in Marseille in April, which is great. And then we're playing in London and Paris and Germany.
Everybody hates an emergency case, uh-huh. Everybody hates an emergency case, uh-huh. 'Cause who disgraces emergency cases? But when you say we're gone, we still hang on, uh-huh. When you say we're gone, we still hang on, uh-huh. 'Cause nah, nah, nah's a waste of time, uh-huh. 'Cause everybody hates an emergency case, uh-huh. Everybody hates an emergency case, uh-huh. 'Cause who disgraces emergency cases? Cases.
My favourite record of all time is The Undertones' Teenage Kicks, and I was driving up to a match at Liverpool when I heard Peter Powell play that on the radio, and actually I had to pull over to the side of the road. I just burst into floods of tears. And when I can no longer be affected by records like that in a totally irrational way, because I don't think you should be able to explain it. When that happens, that'll be time for me to knock it on the head.
She was mad, she looks so good. I
Down. Next time, we'll have to do better. I gotta get 16th of June 1978 on a wet, miserable day in Belfast, Derry's one and only punk band, who call themselves The Undertones, recorded the track Teenage Kicks. Thanks to Radio 1 DJ John Peel, who said it was his favourite song of all time, Teenage Kicks captured the nation's heart. And now the band are back to re-release that iconic four-song EP. Well, joining me now is one of the band's singers and bass player, Michael Bradley. Thanks for coming in.
Very welcome, Tati.
Last night was the 30th anniversary, so I'm kind of surprised you're in and in one piece. Was it a good night?
It was a very good night. We were playing in Dingwalls in Camden. It was to mark the launch of the anthology and also the re-release of the original single, Teenage Kicks. It's on a 7-inch vinyl, which still plays in some record players. There's no point in putting it on the CD player, though, because nothing will happen, you know.
Why do you think the song was so popular then and is still popular now?
Well, I think it's a very simple song and it's played with a great deal of enthusiasm and energy. You know, it's a very basic kind of four-chord song and it still sounds great, you know, and that's me saying it, you know, when I played on it, but it sounds very, very fresh. We're just basically...
Timeless.
We went down and just turned the guitars up as loud as we could and just whacked it out.
Mm. And how important was John Peel, do you think, to the band's success?
Oh, completely, completely.
It's all down to him, then.
It is. It's as if he sang on the record. We were huge fans, like many people were at that time, because that was where you heard great records. And we sent the record to him. We used to phone him up before that and looking for requests, you know, before the record even came out. But we sent it to him, and he loved it, played it twice, and it was heard by a record company in London. A record company who would have probably ignored us if it hadn't been for John Peel playing it, you know. So, as well as that, many years afterwards, he always talked about it, which is fantastic.
You started off, you know, with a vibe, very punk rock. Mm. Later on in the career, power pop. What happened there?
We were always trying different things. We were always experimenting. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't work, you know. But we were always very, very wary of just playing the same songs all the time. Looking back on it, the best stuff, I think, was the first and second LP. But the other things, it was always worth doing, you know, even if they're not fantastic to listen to them many years later.
So you're still a rocker?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming in and good luck with all.
Thank you very much. Now it won't take long. Now before you